Okay, so welcome. This is already our second and last conference call for RM101, which is Risk Management in Rural and Remote Communities. I just call it Manage Risk for short. It's kind of a long title. I'd like to acknowledge that I'm hosting this call from the traditional territory of territories of Kwan-Lundun First Nation and Tonkawa Council. So thank you for joining me today. I think it's cold in a lot of your communities, so hopefully you guys are in a nice warm space and not too chilly where you're at. So on today's call, we're going to start with our quick round of introductions like we always do, and then I'd like to dig into a bit of this week's content, but then I'd like to really take some time discussing risk management considerations that are really unique to our communities in the north, like our small northern remote communities. So I'm hoping we can save enough time at the end of the call to do that. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to do a round of introductions to start, just so we can remember who's who and find out where everyone's at. And I do have a question for you after you introduce yourself. You can choose to answer it or not. It's totally up to you. This is not, you don't have to. So we're going to go, our circle is going to go Sherry, Scott, Peter, Trista, Kumathik, and David. And when you introduce yourself, name, community, and your role in recreation, consider sharing. So you can pass on this if you want, but consider sharing one thing from last week that stood out as important for you. So maybe you had a little aha moment about managing risk, or maybe it was something about how people perceive risk or how you rate risk or something like that. So Sherry, I'd like to invite you to start us off, and then we'll go to Scott and then Peter.
Okay, Sherry from Haines Junction. My role is with the skiing program that we have running in the community through the school. And one kind of aha from last week, and as I looked at the things for this week, was as simple as, why am I not taking my cell phone out, even just as close as on the school field with me? Just for one more little management practice.
That's an interesting one, hey. I guess, maybe dates to the eras when we didn't have cell phones or when our batteries died quickly because it was cold outside, but really interesting. Thanks, Gary. That's great to hear. Let's go over to Scott.
Hi, Scott. I am the executive director for the Hay River Youth Center. And one revelation, I think, in that survey, I listed myself as being someone who enjoys moderate risk, but I realized when it comes to planning that I'm actually extremely risk averse. So that's definitely a something that I can reflect on and maybe and try and allow for a little more to have a little more, I don't know, fun, I guess. Thanks.
That's interesting, Scott. So what you feel like in your personal life is different to how you manage what you do at work. And I'd be curious if anyone wants to pop in the chat if that's the same for them, if they perhaps enjoy more risk in their personal life than what they would do when they're planning programs. So thank you for sharing. Over to you, Peter.
I kind of just didn't consider the fact that a lot of activities that people program and that we do, like, without proper instruction, they are actually incredibly risky. Like, they're exponentially more risky than if you do have proper supervision and instruction. Like, someone just jumping into an activity, and I kind of failed to consider that, like, people are always being instructed before doing group programming, usually, and if you just jump into it, it would be really dangerous, I guess.
Yeah, and that's a good way to think about that risk is in five different areas. So maybe some people might jump into an activity and there's no instruction, but maybe you provide limitations in other ways, right? Or you manage risk in other ways. So it is interesting to look at what we do in our day-to-day practice versus how some people might approach it, or if you don't have any background in planning recreation, how you might approach it differently too. So thanks, Peter. I see somebody just joined the call, 819-598 number.
Hi, it's me, Juliette. I'm joining with my personal phone.
That's great. Welcome. I'll just add you at the end of our circle then. I'm just going to mute for 1 sec because I have to cough. Sorry. My apologies. I'm recovering from a cold, and sometimes I can't quite mute my phone fast enough. So sorry about that. Okay, Trista, you popped in the chat that you're the rec programmer in Igneous, Ontario, and you changed your perspectives on the risk towards your event setup that you're having this weekend already. So that's really great that you're able to take what we've talked about and what you hear from other people and put it to use already. So thanks for that, Trista. Okay, let's go to Kumanovic and then David and then Juliana. So introduce yourself and what's something that stands out or meant something to you from last week?
Okay, my name is Kumanovic. I'm the Recreation Coordinator for the Municipality of Iqaluit. And the one thing that was important from last week that was important to me were the 5K areas. The 5 key risk areas, like the staff needing some type of requirements at a public place like the hall.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Kumanovic. It's interesting because sometimes we tend to think of managing risk in just one or two of the 5 areas. So having 5 areas for us to think about makes sure that we're more likely to manage or control risks that might pop up that we might not be aware of. So thank you for mentioning that. I appreciate it. And over to you, David, and then to Juliana.
Okay, just rephrase the question again for me, please.
Could you introduce yourself and tell us where you're joining us from? And then just tell us something that stood out for you from our conversations last week. And if there wasn't anything, that's fine, too.
Hello, David. Program Coordinator, Elder Active. I wasn't in a conference call last week for this RM101.
Okay. So, and you, David, actually jumped into this learning event a while back, so it might be a bit to... If I was you, I wouldn't recall what was a learning event if I did it that long ago. So,
well, I'm reviewing it, so just for today's call, and yeah, you know, at this point, using the scale is good. Risk of, you know, management, it's key. You got to do what you got to do.
Awesome, thank you, David.
I know that doesn't help.
No, it's okay. Like, we all have different perspectives, so thank you. Thanks for introducing yourself. Over to you, Juliana.
Hi, so Juliana here from Cambridge Bay. I would say that something that I kept in mind from after reviewing the material, going through the phone call, was how much risk is okay or acceptable for your organization or group for your project to take on.
That's great. Thanks, Juliana. And that's actually a really good lead into some of our conversation today. So I appreciate you pointing that out. Okay, well, welcome, everybody. Thank you for sharing. Last week, we talked about approaching risk management in a disciplined way so that we don't miss any of those key risks. And Kumanovic, you just reminded us of that when you talked about the 5 key areas. I'm sorry, I don't mean to cough in your ears. You may also have noticed that the risk of injury is not the only type of risk that we approach. That's where our minds kind of go to in recreation. We think of somebody getting hurt. But there's also other types of risks that we need to consider. So we have to consider things like environmental risk, so damage to the environment that we're in. We have to think of reputational risks, so your organization's reputation. If you do something that is, you know, a little bit out of line with people's expectations, it's pretty easy for your organization to, you know, sort of suffer some some reputational damages, so to speak. There's also property damages. You know, when we run programs, there's a chance that, you know, skates are going to get broken, boards are going to get broken, bathrooms are going to get wrecked, playground equipment, things like that. And another one in this day and age that's a risk with doing things and collecting information, whether it's on paper or online, is privacy. So, you know, you hear in the news about data breaches where, you know, a disk with everybody's private information gets in the wrong hands. So, you know, that's also a risk when we're running recreation programs. There's the risk of things being stolen, too. So I encourage you, as you move forward, to think that risk is not just about injury. Yes, that's important, because we owe a duty to our participants to make sure that they're safe. But there's so many other risks that come in when you're the provider of recreation programs and services. Not to scare you off, but in reality, you can never get rid of or manage all the risk. So you manage as much risk as possible before you start or continue a program or an event. So last week you chose an activity, mostly you chose a program or something or an event, and rated the risk in a couple of different ways. And I appreciate your ratings. I'll give you a quick reply back after today's call, but I've read the ones that you've popped in there. And then this week, you're going to identify some of the controls that can be put into place to manage or reduce the risks you identified. And at the beginning of the call, before I started the recording, I was talking to Scott. So you guys can have a look at Scott that he posted. Scott's done a great job of identifying risks. He's also identified how he's going to address those risks already. And then he gave the risk rating. So, Scott, you can imagine if you remove some of those controls, like you don't have everybody trained in first aid, or you use helmets that aren't acceptable for skating, you know, like bike helmets sometimes aren't as great for skating, maybe that would change what your risk rating is. So it's a good example of how we tend to, in recreation, think of things, and when we think of the risk, we already have put stuff in place, and that's called controls. So you might have to back up, and I'll reply to each of you individually. You might have to back up and say, well, actually, here's the controls I already identified. So I'll let you know in a private response if you've already identified some of those controls and what they are. So let's start off our call. Well, we're halfway through our call, but I just would like to jump into the three steps in the risk management process that were shown on slide 15. And as you may recall from looking at these slides, on slide 15, the first step was to rate, like we identify the major risks and we rate the risk. So you've already done that activity. So in reality, you should be doing this type of risk assessment for all your high-risk programs, your high-risk facilities, or your high-risk participants. I don't think you need to do this for every single program. So if you're running a quilting program, you're in a controlled environment, you probably wouldn't need to go through this process. But if you've got a youth center and you want to install a rock climbing wall, you probably need to go through this. Or Kumanatic, you did yours on hockey. I think it was hockey and elders, or an elders activity. That's a high-risk population or target group. So definitely it's really good to be able to rate the level of risk for something that you're doing with elders. So don't think that you have to do this for everything you do, just for the things that are higher risk than the other things. If you flip ahead to slide 24, where step two is introduced, and I'll just scroll down there myself, it says that we do something called a risk audit. And really all that means is that you're reviewing your major risks. You're looking at the five major areas, and then you're identifying controls, which are ways to reduce the risk. Not necessarily get rid of it, because the only way to get rid of risk is not to do that activity. But we're trying to figure out ways that we can make it less risky. So, Sherry, you mentioned taking your cell phone with you. And I think one of my suggestions to you was maybe with 23 kids have 3 leaders rather than 2. So those are controls that you could use to reduce your risk in that situation. We always have something. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
That's okay. It was hard to do just do the set up the situation without already putting the controls in. So I have a whole page of, okay, I would do this, this, and this in reality.
Exactly, and I think there are a number of other people on the call did the same thing. So, I might adjust this activity for next year because it seems to happen each time that people are already thinking of what those controls are. So I might get you to do it backwards next year, except you guys won't be here next year. So, but thanks, and yours was a good example, and so was Scott. So thank you both of you. But as you can see, even Sherry in your post and Scott in yours, there was still some residual risk. You didn't get to a 0 number. It was lower with the controls, but there was still residual or leftover risk. And what that residual or leftover risk is important for us to look at. So if you go to slide 25, it steps you through the process of reviewing the key risk areas and some of the questions that you might want to ask. And this is also, you've got this more detailed in your handouts as well that are linked. Slide 26 helps you identify the gaps a little bit more. So, you know, Peter, you mentioned supervision and instruction. One of the questions I would ask is, do your instructors actually have lesson plans? Because if you're teaching something that has a skill progression, lesson plans are a really important way of making sure that you're helping people progress in their skills the right step at a time. So lesson plans can be a really good risk management tool. So that's you can also find the table that's on slide 26. It's also on page 7 of your risk management handout. So slide 27, if you have that in front of you, shows you how to do this review. So I know it's a little complicated, but if you look at the boxes with the arrows and the numbers along the bottom of the page, it reminds you that the first thing you do is describe the major risks. And you guys have done a really good job of that in your activity from last week. And then you've all done a good job of rating each risk. What you're going to do this week now is start to identify controls that reduce the risk and then assess the risk, assuming those controls are in place. So Scott, not to put you on the spot, but I just want to ask you a question about your activity. So let's take your team skating activity. If you took out the first aid part, so all your staff are trained and there's no first aid and the first aid station's on site, if you took that out and the helmets, would your risk be higher than what it was that you assessed?
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm just working it backwards from what you shared, but what this basically shows you is that if you have a risk, you rate the risk, you identify how you can reduce or manage that risk a little bit, your remaining risk should be less than what your first one was, ideally. Now that might sound a bit complicated, so if you have any questions, just jump in, or you can raise your hand on your phone by using *2, or you can pop in the chat. Anyone have any questions about this process of reviewing your risks and coming up with controls and figuring out what your leftover risk is? Okay, and I'm happy to explain it some more if you want to afterwards. So now we're going to take a second and we're going to have a conversation, and this will help sort of put this into your mind. So let's take a moment and think about this idea of residual risk. And if you have the slides open, I'm on slide 28 now. So I want you to think about, and maybe what I'll do is I'll ask each person, we'll go around our circle, and I'll ask you one question at a time. And you can pass if somebody else has already sort of commented on this. Or maybe I'll ask each person all of the questions. That, I think that makes a bit more sense. And Scott, can we start with you in our circle since I just used your example? So the question that I'd like to ask you is, when you put those controls in place and there's still some risk to your activity, would you say that the leftover risk in your activity is manageable? Who decides if it's manageable? And how much is okay? So I'll pop that in the chat. So you don't have to answer each one exactly, but Scott, just comment maybe on the leftover risk. Would you say that you're okay with running the activity the way it is?
Yeah, for sure.
And if you had, if the risk, the leftover risk was higher, like let's say you were doing this in an outdoor rink environment, are there some things that might influence that risk that maybe might affect the risk if you're outdoors rather than indoors?
I would say the distance between the rink and, you know, medical health. Also the, you know, the weather, well, you know, how cold it is and how that's going to kind of exacerbate things. If say, if someone is injured and immobile, then suddenly they're exposed to elements as well. So that would add some additional risk, I think.
Exactly. So that's a really good example of, you know, if your activity is in a different environment, what else you might need to consider. And so, Scott, in your organization, who decides if the activities that you're planning have an acceptable amount of risk? Who's responsible for that?
Me.
Okay, and are you leading all the activities too, or do you have leaders for the activities?
I lead most of the activities, but we also have staff facilitators who can lead as well.
Okay, so do you ever have conversations with them about the risk in their in the activity and where that cutoff line is, where you might decide too much risk, we're not doing this, like an outdoor activity when it's minus 40, for example?
Probably not as much as I should.
Okay, so that would be the next step is, you know, with any leaders that are working with you to make sure that they understand where those cutoffs are, because if you're the one who's making the decision, then the responsibility falls back on you, for example. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Scott. Thanks for letting me put you on the spot. I knew that you'd be okay with that. Peter, I'm going to go to you next, and I'd like you to think about you know, what sort of influences how much risk is acceptable or how much is okay, and who ultimately in your work decides what amount of risk is okay? And I think you're muted. Oh, there we go.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I guess what influences how much risk is acceptable is sort of the bylaws and policies that we have in place in our organization. Like at RPA, like the programs that we help support, we can't run specific ones that are too high risk. For example, like mountain biking. We even have issues with like, if we want to give out promotional material, we can't really give out like toboggans to schools because it's just a bit too high risk in case there was ever an incident. What was the next question? Sorry.
Who decides what that level of, like what's acceptable and what's not?
I would say the board of directors decides on the policies. Is that, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that is, they're kind of establishing the rules of what is allowed and what isn't.
In your organization, it's the executive director because they, you have what's called a policy governing board, so they just approve the big picture stuff, but those day-to-day decisions about how much risk is acceptable falls to your executive director, same way as Scott is the ED in with the Hay River Youth Center. So that means that when you, if you were ever in a position where you're wondering is this okay or not, the person you would go to would be your executive director.
And what would you call a board that is leading those decisions? Or what would be the style of leadership?
They're more of a hands-on operational board. So when we come around, it might be interesting to ask David because he has a board and his board structure might be different. So maybe we can hold that question and see if David has any other insight as to who decides that in his organization.
Okay.
And I think to a certain extent for your organization, the insurance company decides that because there's certain things that they won't insure.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Great, thanks. Trista, I'm not sure if you're able to pop into the chat any comments. Maybe even just who has a final say in how much risk is acceptable in your role. Like, is it you or your supervisor or where who weighs in on that? Coming around my circle then, Kumanopic, I've got you next in the circle. Excuse me. How do you figure out how much risk is okay and who helps you make the decision?
Okay, that depends on what programs that we're running. So if I were to try and lower the risk for the after-school program, I would listen to the radio and see if the elementary is closing. And if it does close due to the weather, I would close the after-school program for the students. But if the event were for the community, I would need to discuss the risks with my director, Fabian, and we would be discussing it. And after we discuss it, we then have to go to a committee. But since we don't have a committee, we have a third say, who is the SAO.
That's great. So I like the idea that you align with what the school policies are, because if you're taking direction from the school for your after-school programs, that means that there's consistency there. Parents don't have to wonder what's happening with your programs, that they already know what with school. So that's a really good process. And then, as you said, you have your direct supervisor, and then there's the SAO. So, you know, ultimately, if you're unsure about if you should go ahead with an activity or not, always having somebody else to weigh in on that with you is really helpful, because it kind of means that all that responsibility doesn't fall on you. So thank you for that, Kumanopic. Trista's talked in the chat, and she said she'd figure out what risk is acceptable, and if it's a big event or something like that, discuss it with mayor and council. So thank you, Trista. Okay, David, over to you, and then over to Juliana. In the work that you do with the programming, how much risk is okay or acceptable, and who decides? You might have heard Peter's question about, is it the board or is it your executive director? It'd be interesting to hear what you think.
First of all, the board doesn't make the risk decisions. The executive director works directly with the insurance company and refers to me for making sure that we're addressing the insurance company's concerns. So it filters through that way between Alex and I in regards to, are we managing the risk to an acceptable level to the insurance company. In terms of direct risk management, that's left up to me to put the pieces into place, i.e., do they have first aid? Is the equipment properly checked? Maintenance of the equipment? Does the instructor have good sense of the trail, i.e., reconning? This type of thing. Now, if it's an indoor program, that varies again, but the instructors will do a par Q in some programs, but all programs, participants sign the waiver and risks are mitigated through the instructor. So there's conference with the instructors ahead of time of are they fully qualified and do they have risk evaluation. In other words, have they gone through and made sure that potential hazards and or injuries are addressed before the injuries occur?
Okay. So really then your instructors and people delivering the programs are front line for managing risk. The next line of control will be you if you're supervising them. And then if there's still questions about if that risk is acceptable, it would go to the ED, who's responsible for working with insurance boards, stuff like that.
Right. And one of the key things that I do and have done in, for years with the instructors is, and it's up on my board, the top first word is prevention. And before they're even hired, I talk to them and get them to thoroughly understand it's through thinking the program ahead of time and dealing with potential hazards ahead of time. So prevention is number one in safety, and that has boded me well.
Awesome, thank you. And Juliana, you just popped in the chat, so I'm guessing you might be somewhere where you prefer me to read it out. Is that correct, or did you want to jump in and share that? Yeah, I'll go ahead and read it out. So Juliana said that it depends on the program. Sometimes there's a fire department. So great point. We have a fire departments control a number of people in facilities and things like that. Sometimes council and sometimes the CAL, which would be the same as an SAO. So thank you, Juliana. And Sherry, not to leave you till the end, but coming back to you, how do you, what influences how much risk is acceptable and who has the ultimate decision?
I have a fair bit of autonomy because I have worked in the school as a teacher for many years and I've worked with the ski program for many years, so we have a trusting relationship back and forth. But really, ultimately, it comes down to the principal, who of course is guided by superintendent and all of that above her. But just in the day-to-day running, if there's something I want to talk about, it's the principal I would talk with. Before that, I may even be talking with, say, the classroom teacher, gym teacher, whoever's also out there with me. So hey, today I'm thinking of doing this, or next week I'm thinking of doing this. What do you think? And it's been a couple of cool examples. This week it was the temperature where it was on the cusp. And it's we could maybe do it, maybe not. And so we talked it through and decided no, and that's with the principal weighing in as well. Another time it was sort of trails, let's maybe do this or this with this group. And it's teacher weighed in and said, with this group, I think maybe this would be the better option. So I don't know if that kind of answers that.
Yeah, you said a couple of things that I thought were interesting. One is that communication with the people you're working with is really important when we're managing risk. And then the other one was that there's an element of trust. So when you're working with somebody for the first time, you might need to spend more time covering, like David said, prevention or chatting with them about what the risks are and where your cutoff or tolerance level is or how much is acceptable. But as you get to know them better, that trust, you get to know their own comfort and their knowledge with what you're doing. So thanks. That's a great way to wrap up that conversation, Sherry. So now I'm going to do a quick fire question. That means that you have 5 seconds or less to answer the next question. And so my question to you, and let's see, we started with Scott Peter. I'm going to start with you this time. So here comes the question. In 5 seconds or less, answering this question, what can you do if, after you put the controls in place, the risk is too high? So what can you do, Peter?
You can certainly cancel the activity.
So cancel. We might get to the point where you don't have an answer to this, but let's go around and see. Trista, you can pop in the chat what you can do apart from cancel if you can think of something else. Timonopic, is there something that you would do if the risk is too high besides canceling it? Is there something else you could do?
I would postpone the event.
That's a good one. So that's a good, we often do that in weather, right? Or these days, if you don't have enough staff, sometimes you have to postpone things. So good answer. Thank you. David, can you think of anything besides counseling and postponing that you could do if the risk is still too high? And I think David's still muted. So, Juliana,
it could be go to an alternate location or add additional staff.
Exactly. So that's two things. So alternate location is a good one. So you're running an outdoor walking program weather's bad, you go indoors. Perfect. And add more staff. So you've got more participants than what you expect, and you're not comfortable with the ratio, so you add more leaders. Awesome. Juliana, is there something else that you might do? So far we've said cancel, postpone, alternate location, or more leaders.
Think about what we can do to adapt the activity and have a lower risk.
Yeah, adapting is good, and it's ringing a bell for me, the few Halloweens in Watson Lake where there were things with fireworks and they couldn't ensure safety, so adapting, you know, the event to not have fireworks and just have a bonfire or something like that. So adapting what you're doing is a good one. Sherry, then Scott. Sherry, is there something else that you could do if the risk is too high? So far people have said cancel, postpone, alternate location, more leaders, or adapt what you're doing.
I was thinking about some of the work in pre-setup. I was thinking about the ski trails that I'm going to take the kids on, ski it the day before just to make sure of no hazard branches down in one hill of concern. So go ahead and set up a pylon at the place where they need to stop, catch the breath, and then continue on down. So some pre-setup things.
Great. So if you're aware that there may be hazards, to set things up to try and reduce those even further. Great. And Scott, anything else? I know it's hard. You're at the end of the circle this time, but besides cancel, postpone, alternate location, more leaders, adapt, or further reduce your hazards?
What jumped to mind was, like, try and find more resources. So, like, maybe not necessarily extra staff, but maybe there's extra equipment that you can, you know, loan or purchase that will help mitigate the risk.
Excellent. Yeah, so you might need more stuff, so maybe there's not enough people with the right type of helmets for skating or something like that. And so if you have them that you can actually hand out, that further reduces it. So excellent. The other thing that I've done before is to split the group into two and deliver the same activity twice rather than once. So reduce your participant numbers too. So all of those are options. Just remember that if you feel uncomfortable with the risk being too high, probably a good indicator that you need to change something or cancel or postpone. So thanks for that part of the conversation. As I said, I wanted to get a little bit into some of the special considerations that we have in the North around risk management. And some of those are listed on slide 30, and we've already talked about some of them, like weather, for example. The other ones listed here are things like travel or alcohol or the structure of your organization, food, things like that. So I just would like you to sort of think about, is there something that you think is unique to your community that's a special consideration for risk, either to your community or to your organization? And what might that be? So I just changed my question from what I have taped down. So what special considerations might be unique to your community or your work? So let's start. Trista, I'll let you pop in the chat. Kumanantik, is there something about your community, which is a Glulik, that is unique to what the rest of us might experience that really makes you, you know, have to think about some of the risks with the programs that you're delivering? And that's kind of that might be a hard question, so you can pass if it doesn't make sense or if you can't think of anything.
What was the question?
Is there anything special about recreation in the Glulik that you have to really consider that makes things a little riskier for you?
I think not that I know of or experienced, but I think it's the mental well-being, either like seizures, maybe.
Yeah, and I remember you mentioning that on our other call, is that the increase in the number of seizures in your community, I think that was you who said that, right? Since the pandemic. So that's definitely something that is unique to your community. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yes. Yep. Increasing seizures after the pandemic.
Yeah, so that's something that's pretty unique. So that's a good thing. And you also mentioned mental well-being. And I imagine that there's, you know, coming out of the pandemic, that's been another challenge. And sometimes people are not feeling as well and maybe dealing with how people are feeling and trying to return to recreation in a way that's more supportive. It's challenging and there's some risks with it. So thank you, Kumatik. David, in about just given the time in about 20 seconds or less, in your role working with elders and seniors, are there any special considerations that might apply more to you and that make recreation riskier?
Yes, the one that I keep into consideration all the time is fatigue. Making sure that the duration of the program is within the accepted norm for the fitness of the people participating.
That's great. That's definitely, and that relates to the population that you're dealing with. But also in the north, if you think about being outdoors in some of our environments, that fatigue may come on faster than if you were down south in nice warm climates and things like that. Thank you. Juliana, you can either jump in or pop in the chat. Are there any special considerations for managing risk that you have in your role? Or another way of wording that question is, what might make recreation in your community riskier?
If I think about an activity with the elders, most of them, they are unilingual, so they would speak in Winnetum, but not all the young people or the staff does. So just to make sure that if, in case of an emergency, that's something like really important that needs to be explained to them, and we don't always have interpreters in the activity. So what we would do if we need to say something or act quick and fast and to make sure that they would understand the message.
That's great. I think that's probably very unique in different ways in different communities, because if you do have elders that are speaking their first language and perhaps younger people that aren't, then that communication is more challenging. The same might apply in some communities where you have newcomers from outside of the country coming into your community. So thanks for pointing that out. Definitely communication and our ability to communicate risks and control risks is affected that way. So thank you. Sherry, how about you? What makes recreation in your community or in your role a little riskier?
Yeah, I was trying to think about that. Maybe one thing would be, say, our 6-7 class would be a more capable skier, so they could ski further and longer, you know, if we wanted to, but they are the least, as a group, the least dressed. Many of them don't want to wear that type of winter clothing that we should have, so being on the playground is okay, but to go further, whereas they are younger kids, are well-dressed. But just watching on these colder days, the environmental factor for kids who don't want to dress for the weather.
That's a good point. And do you have actually like a bin full of clothes in case they come and they're not dressed appropriately?
We sure do. We sure do. We have 3 lockers of clothing, but it's very interesting how many do not want to dig into there as you hand them something. No mitts, no hat, no snow pants. But yeah. And 1 year we had the rule, you don't come out skiing. When it's an after school program, we can say you don't come with us if you don't dress properly. When it's an in school program, is it kind of, yeah, they tend to come out as they are, and then we deal with what we have. And they manage. They come back in cold. But
yeah. Okay, well, that's a really good example, so sort of the weather, the climate, but also the age willingness to dress appropriately for an activity. And, yeah, I remember my son when he was a teenager wearing running shoes to school at minus 50. So, so thank you for that. The other thing I do think of that maybe we haven't touched on, and it just came to mind with Haines Junction, is bears, right? So wildlife is another unique risk factor in many of our communities too. So just wanted to, hopefully I didn't take anybody's one by saying wildlife. Over to you, Scott. Is there something that makes recreation in your community or the recreation your organization delivers riskier than what somebody else might experience?
I guess, I don't know, going back to what we experienced in spring of last year, I guess there's an increased risk of being kind of flooded out at a moment's notice, so.
Yeah, that's, and I understand there's already sort of planning underway for this season, so hopefully that's really traumatic and that's hard, so that would affect everything that you might have planned, right?
Yeah, I mean, it makes it you know, harder to try and plan stuff for that, you know, that little bit of breakup time.
Yeah, and also probably for you doing youth programs, you would also need to be very aware of what the emergency response plan is if there was a state of emergency called because of this, right? So that if you're in the middle of an activity and you know how to respond, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And is your youth center in a location where your facility could be flooded as well?
Well, we are operating out of two facilities right now. So, like, the rec center is pretty safe, although it was one of the places that eventually got evacuated when downtown flooded last year. But another thought, too, is the other space we use is actually a basement. So, again, it wasn't in a place that really got hit, but you know, that's an escalated risk, I guess, if you're below ground level and you have the risk of flooding.
Yeah, and so that's the reason I asked you that is that's a good example of what I said at the beginning of the call, that our risks are not just about injuries. They can also be about damage to property. So, you know, mitigating or managing or figuring out strategies to try and control those risks to your facilities is important too. Thank you. Peter, over to you. Is there something that makes, do you have special considerations, or is there something that makes recreation for your organization or in the communities you work with riskier?
I definitely think the more rural and remote the community, the less sort of oversight there is on risk policy. Like, not saying there isn't, but it's just that, like, when I, for example, live down in British Columbia, like, there's just a tremendous amount of rules, and it seems to be regulated more often for whatever reason. And so I think just being careful and cross-referencing the way that you manage risk with how other organizations manage risk, not necessarily in your community, but also elsewhere, is important. But yeah, I don't know if that makes sense, but.
Yeah, no, that's good. Thank you. And I think Trista probably got busy because I didn't see anything in the chat there. So that brings us around in our circle. So I just wanted to mention, like, keep in mind that there's different circumstances or situations that each of you might face in your communities, but there's also similarities. So coming back to that slide where I said that there's sort of special risk areas, if you're dealing with travel, I think Isabel mentioned last week on the call about, you know, having an incident with a flat tire with kids in a bus. With travel, make sure that you have things in place, like what do you do if something goes wrong, and follow those. You know, we've talked about weather, so have a cold weather policy and a cutoff temperature. And if it's borderline, like Sherry mentioned, have that conversation. If you are having events where there's alcohol involved, and Scott, I think we touched on this in one of the earlier learning events, is make sure you have the right things in place, your licensing, extra insurance, policies, procedures, because things can go sideways quickly if you don't have those things in place. And food, I think most of you are probably familiar with food safety guidelines and certifications and things if you're serving food as well. So those are some different special considerations. So I think that was a really good phone call today. I just want to sort of touch on what your required learning activity is that's due on Sunday. I think most of you on the call did your one from last week, so you can move on to the next one. And it's due on Sunday, and it's in number 7. We've provided a template that you can use, and there's also an example that was done a few years ago from Bechico in NWT, and it is to do with elders. So if you're working with elders in your program, you might want to take a look at that one. But don't feel that you have to put as much detail into it as the example, because that example is quite detailed. If you're doing this learning, if there's other people in your community who are in this learning event, like Kuminapik, if you and Trevor want to work on something together, you can, or you can do it on your own. It's totally up to you. So for your required learning activity, use the template, and you're going to come up with, you can use the same program or activity that you already did. You've already considered the level of risk. So you're just going to highlight some of the ideas for reducing these risks and create an action plan which says what you're going to do, when you're going to do it, and who's going to do it. So if in your activity from last week you've already put those controls in, just pull them out and say these are controls that are already in place and this is why I would do them. And if that's not clear, just send me a quick note. I will also try and reply to your post from last week so that it can be a little clearer. Any questions? Yeah, coming up it for sure if you want to. It's number 7. Number 6 is a really quick check-in to see how you feel about risk now compared to how you felt about it at the beginning of the learning event. But for sure, you can do number 7 with Trevor if you want to. And if you want to stay on the call, David wants me to stay on the call. If you want to stay on the call and check what it is, or you can text me as well. Any other questions before we wrap up? Star 2 gets you to put your hand up, or you can just unmute and mention your question.
Activity 7.
Okay, well. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Barry.
Activity 7 refers to handout number 7.
Not exactly. Sorry, activity number 7 in the learning event is the RLA risk management plan. Let me see if it's on page 7. So the handouts are a little bit different. So activity number 7 is your second required learning activity. It's under week 2, and when you click on it, it gives you the instructions for the risk management
plan. I know what you mean now by activity, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, that might be a bit confusing. But if you have any other questions, let me know.
Sounds good.
Otherwise, I'd like to say thank you for a really good call. Let me just check the calendar. I don't think we have a core learning event conference call next. Oh, actually, we don't next week, but we do the following week. So next Thursday, there's no call for you, those of you doing the core learning events. It will be the Thursday, March 9th is your next call on a Thursday. If you're in my Wednesday learning events, yes, you have a conference call next week. So thanks, everybody. Have a great day, and I will stay on the call for those of you who have questions.